keywords and some question type words on the backboard. And then I'm going to pick on people to answer them.
And I'll shut the doors so you're not allowed to escape.
Speak to us.
Okay. So so here's some keywords, just operationalism. Excuse my handwriting, apology. You can tell I've been influenced by the previous. Quantum theory, general relativity, special relativity, causality, reference frames. Inference, and then there's all sorts of questions we can ask, like what? should ICS is indefinite causal structure. Okay. More questions. Okay, so John at the back. Any questions? Because I know you can think about things from a different perspective.
Right. Well, I mean, you might save me for the second discussion after my talk, but I'm going to present.
No, but that's anticipating those all.
Okay.
Don't give you a talk. Just sort of questions. Yeah.
So, one of the things in my talk will be about how a quantum field theory of general relativity already exists.
Okay. So this is how.
This is how.
Okay. So how a quantum field theory.
I don't know about anyone else, but I'd like to see more of critical discussion about, first of all, what operationalism, what we think it is, and whether, you know, how productive it is to think operationally, or whether we need to go beyond it.
I guess that's a should as well, right? So that's a what and a
should. Should be. It's
I have a question about what do people think is the ontological status of causal structure?
So what this is what do people think?
Yeah.
What's gonna have a lot of
what is the ontological status of causal structure in people's mind?
Trying to phrase this as an is because there's more space over there. is there a difficult or non-trivial quantum causal inference problem? Maybe just non-trivial.
What's your definition of difficult or non-trivial? You mean computationally difficult? Do you mean
difficult in the sense that classical causal inference is difficult, and then you're missing some information and you're trying to get it back, so you have to be clever.
Well, it's not really a question, but I think I'd like to see more physical realizations of causal structures, and especially exotic causal structures.
More visualizations?
Yes, so like more in-depth analysis of what is the physics of indefinite causal structures. Yes, you can put it as a how, like how indefinite causal structures. Yeah.
Is that intended to be distinct from the ontological question? Like a physical as opposed to an ontological?
Physical in the sense of kind of actual physics theories with Hamiltonians and Lagrangians,
okay,
as opposed to logical exploration of what are the possible causal structures.
But you consider that distinct from ontology or not necessarily?
I mean, if you like, you can put it there. I wouldn't be keen of just committing to ontology or versus non-ontology, just physics, textbook physics.
Canonical experiments?
Yeah.
Sorry? Like
the experiment is one of, yeah, sure.
Thought
experiment, yeah.
No, I just wanted to kind of clarify any preference between experiments embedded within known physics that simulate exotic causal structures or really descriptions. Some
more preferences towards like things that look like quantum gravity. I mean, of course, that's the exciting stuff, is the new physics. I mean, I don't think you need me to encourage that. I mean, like, I guess we are all more interested in that.
So I'd like to know, is there a good theory where gravity would not permit a quantum superposition, and, you know, as a result, then you get a different result in this Bose experiment that I was talking about.
So the theory that treats gravity classically.
Yeah.
Good quantum theory that treats gravity classically.
Yeah.
Does anyone want to address that question rather than?
Well, supposedly this Diocese approach is what does that, in the sense that the problem with coupling classical theory to a quantum theory is you get contradiction unless you put in noise. So the basic idea is, okay, gravity's noisy, and then you put in enough noise, and maybe gravity's noisy enough that it doesn't allow things to entangle. And there are at least partial Newtonian frameworks where that works. There's no good, fully relativistic framework that does the job that I'm aware of, but so it's your definition of a good quantum theory. There's at least a partial quantum theory.
So I could add to that, I don't know how similar it is to the Diocese approach, but Reginato and Hall have a fairly careful,
yeah, that's true. There's
explication of a model of classical gravity interacting with quantum matter.
Reginato
and Hall.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wait,
a while ago.
It's not too long.
I was a PhD student, so that must be 2014.
That's not very long ago. It's not very long ago, young man. It's when people were wearing bell bottoms. That's what.
Maybe just a quick comment on that. That it's actually, as far as I understand, that model will. According to that model, this experiment about entangling particles through gravity will still work. So that model,
yeah,
will still predict entanglement.
Yeah.
So it's very different from the Diocese approach.
So the Diocese with the Tilloy, there's these papers with Tilloy and,
yeah,
Diocese,
yeah,
that predict that it would be noisy and classical.
In the sense, there are very different ideas what does it mean for gravity to be classical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
it's a contender in this journal, actually. It's a hybrid classical quantum when gravity is treated classically.
So I would just add to that, like in line with that question, is there a good one? I think we need more effort trying to make these kinds of theories to see what they do, to see how consistent they are or not. Right. I mean, the bias is generally that gravity is sort of anemic and is a quantum disease that needs to be cured. And if we apply the right quantum cure, then we declare victory. But there's been 40 years of effort by the largest army of theoretical physicists in history by orders of magnitude, and we ain't got it yet. Maybe there's a reason for that?
Because it's the largest army in the history of physics.
Well, sure. But I mean, I'm just saying that it's clearly not the problem I was told it would be when I was the age of this young man.
There's some suggestions that, you know, maybe gravity gets weaker at short length scales, and that might feed into this.
Yeah, are there ideas about asymptotic safety and gravity and all that kind of thing that could be different? Sure. It's a matter of, but I think the notion that gravity really is classical should be pushed harder, and there's, as Fabio said, there are different ways of pushing it, but there hasn't been a huge amount of effort expended, I think primarily for reasons of combination of sociological and empirical bias.
I was going to pick on you next anyway.
I was just going to add to that, and I think this is that the motivation for this is to ask what sort of experiments should be done next.
Yeah.
To either show that it really is a quantum theory that we should be looking for, or whether there has to be some sort of alternative.
Is it what experiments to show that?
This is following on from the, well.
Yeah, just to show that gravity is quantum or not. Okay, let's see, next one.
I have to come up with a question.
Question, a comment.
Okay,
or an answer.
An answer. No, maybe because quantum reference frames have not been mentioned. Maybe are quantum reference frames relevant for the problem of quantum gravity?
Are,
yes. Usually a bit like it is.
Okay, should they use quantum reference? Yeah, sure.
Maybe, yes.
I mean, is
and are
is
the same thing,
is,
right?
No, is here.
/are.
Is, are.
So, yeah, one question would be, is it worth, so instead of just the kind of classical quantum dichotomy, is it worth exploring a larger space of theories? Would that be a constructive thing to do?
So, a larger space of theories than just classical and quantum? Okay.
Yeah, so instead of asking...
So should we explore a larger space of theories?
Yeah, should we ask, you know, if it's non-classical as opposed to quantum, what features would it have?
Do you have any more comments on that? Like, what the reason why you...
And just that quite a few of the no-go theorems to do with kind of this Bose paper can extend to GPTs quite easily. I haven't worked too much on it. So like, it's actually all like one example would be a modification to quantum theory, right? That'd be an example of neither classical nor quantum, and really worth exploring.
This is, of course, somewhat self-promoting, but what the heck. I think we need more exploration of quantum entanglement in curved space-time. We know very little about it. And I guess in my talk I'll say something about what we do know, but we really... we've already learned a number of things that were not necessarily expected, and I think, you know, particularly in terms of what black holes do or don't do, yeah, in curved space time, in strong gravitational fields and that kind of thing, to see at least what the theoretical expectations are. And I think people naively assume what they are without actually definitively exploring them. It's usually just one quantum system. And there's some discussion of entanglement with black hole evaporation, but it's not really done from an operational perspective, typically. And yeah, and I mean, of course, if one can go beyond that, that's good, but we really don't know very much about what will happen there. For example, suppose you have a pair of entangled states and something collapses around one of them. Something's got to give somewhere because the thing forms a black hole. But we really know, to my knowledge, we do not know what will happen in that scenario, for example.
About time, I would say, is time just the rate of change?
Yes.
In the sense that it's not fundamental, it's just the tool to measure change.
Is time?
Is time just a measure of change? Or rate of change?
What's the specific question?
I haven't worked on this. I've always thought that it's not fundamental, and it's just a tool we use to measure things. It might be a fundamental tool in the sense that it's essential to talk about physics, because something has to happen to investigate it, and to happen you need time. But I think it's just in our heads, and that it's just a tool to measure things. It's not a fundamental.
So I mean, it's just a comment, but if time is just a way of measuring rate of change, then what does it mean, or how would we talk about situations where there is no change? It seems in physics we have, that's also a relevant thing to say, but if time is just about rate of change, then we can't say that anymore.
But what are the when there's no change, then there is nothing to investigate and talk. So it's like a frozen lattice, for example, and nothing happens. So then there is nothing to do.
Well, I'm thinking about constants of motion, for example. The fact that they are changed over time is relevant. So even if there's no dynamics going on that you might be interested in.
Alex, do you have comments on this question?
Something related that popped into my mind was, like, what's the relation between time and causality? Like, does one imply the other, or is one more permanent than the other?
I would think yes, because in how I think of causality is there has to be in order for the something to cause something else, there has to be an information that travels from somewhere to somewhere, and if we believe that speed of light, so this needs time to work.
So
for information to reach from one place, from the cause to the effect.
So you say time is more fundamental than causality?
No, I don't say that.
Or you say it the other way around?
No, neither. I'm just saying that for a cause to be the cause of something, for a cause and effect to occur, there has to be time to travel from one place to the other.
So duration is not part of causation, it's just duration and causation is logically.
I'm just thinking how it like connects with like Reichenbach and this idea of, I think, of trying to get temporal order from causation. There, I think you do one more. I'm gonna have that backwards.
Yeah.
Okay. Can we formulate causation, the notion of causation without time?
Okay. Can. Yeah. I'm just can.
Must.
Sure.
So I think that's an easy one to answer. The answer is yes.
I would leave it to the answer.
Thank you.
So Judea Pearl basically does that. I mean, if you look at the definition there, it's in terms of whether your interventions on some variable lead to different probabilities on some other variable, without really saying what these variables are in time. One doesn't have to specify temporal information to understand the definition of causality. Of course, it's helpful to know how they're temporally related because of the apparently contingent fact that causes, in fact, precede their effects. But I guess you could imagine cases where something you do right now could affect something that happened when the dinosaurs were around. Modulo grandfather paradoxes. But
of course, what I had in mind in my question is that, of course, this notion of intervention also presumes time in a certain way. It's in the language of, let's say, do intervention, you're cutting arrows from the past. I mean, I would rather.
Well, wait a sec. Doesn't it just presume a notion of cause? In other words, an intervention is something that itself has no causes that are relevant to variables of interest. Does it really presume time?
Yeah, so I think one of the things to keep in mind is that some of the talk here is referring to different notions, ontologically distinct notions of causation, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think, I was going to talk about this a little bit tomorrow, I think, but I think that different approaches lend themselves to different background assumptions about what causation is, right, and how it works. And so one of the notions that's come up is the sort of Pearl notion, right, where you intervene and then you manipulate and you use that as a handle on what causal structure is. There's the space-time associated notion, which I think is the one that you would want to plug into if you think that thinking about indefinite causal structures is going to lead to help with quantum gravity, right? Then thinking about space-time.
So may I respond now? Since I had enough time to think about it. I mean, in a way, this I think is kind of, I mean, you are presuming part of what I would like to be explained, right? The notion of cause, you're postulating that to be a cause, but it could be very well an effect. Like, I was thinking, I guess, more in this functional dependence notion of causation. I wonder, my question was formulated in that context, but of course, that might be the right way to think what you're suggesting. Like in that example, I wouldn't know you call this a cause, but why? I would like to understand what makes it a cause as opposed to an effect, for instance. I wonder if Rob knows the speculums. Know the answer.
I think I was going to suggest a variation on that question, which is, I think, along the lines of what you were saying. Can we formulate a notion of causation without time and in a setting where evolution is globally unitary? Can we formulate a notion of causation without time, but also in a setting where the dynamics is globally unitary?
But doesn't that assume? In which way is it unitary?
Sorry?
Assuming a global unitary assumes some notion of time?
One time-like surface.
Or
we know that in at least a framework where this is possible, right? You can write a process matrix that overall is a unitary, but it's still indefinite causal structure.
Mm-hmm.
Just as a concrete example of my way to do it.
But you can define that if you can arrive to cyclic causal causation.
Yeah, so you can argue that it's still
assuming
local
notion of time is assumed locally, right? So it's important.
Although if it's a unitary, it's kind of locally reversible, you can reverse everything. So yeah, I guess there is some notion of time, but certainly not a global time.
I wonder in a purely time kind of neutral. Like in terms of functional dependence, so that's what my question was really. Do you think that is possible? Like in your Allen et al. Paper, there seems to be a suggestion that's formulated without any reference to time, but still, if you think about it, it seems like time was presumed in that. If you
you know what I'm referring to.
I would say, I don't think Pearl tries to define causation in terms of interventions. You don't find that really useful, but also it would be a bad idea to do that for, you know, the reasons that David talked about in his talk, that the Burnham cipher is a situation where if I intervene on the plain text, I don't change the probability distribution of the ciphertext. And yet, clearly, the plain text influences the ciphertext. So any appeal to sort of non-trivial due conditionals in Pearl's language as the definition of causation just is dead. It doesn't work. So even if Pearl had suggested it, it would have been a bad idea. But I don't think he...
I think Pearl has a response to that puzzle, though. Doesn't he say that you have to... You have... So I forget which is which. You have the two variables that combine to give you the final text, right?
Think that was key ciphertext.
Okay, thank you. So if you intervene on both of these and you hold one of them fixed,
yep,
and then vary the other one,
yep,
then you do see the causal influence, don't you?
Yeah, you can try to fix those sorts of definitions by talking about stipulating that you condition on other variables. But then you have to be careful not to condition on things that are common effects that will induce correlations that don't represent cause-effect relations. And so you could engage in a process of refining that definition. But I think what I read in Pearl and what I think is a better approach is just to take causation as more primitive and say it's a specification of functional dependencies. You've got a bunch of variables. So Pearl defines these structural causal models where everything's deterministic. So there's no probabilities anywhere in sight. And you just say, okay, these variables depend on these other variables in these specified ways. That's what causal structure is.
Is it important to mention time in those variables? That's my question.
No,
that was my question.
What's important is that it's acyclic.
Yes.
So given that it's acyclic, I can always introduce a foliation on that bag, which you can choose to call a temporal order.
It also has to be directed, right?
I'm sorry?
It has to be directed.
Sure.
From,
yeah.
That
assuming the directiveness, the acyclicness property is what ensures that I can lay down a total ordering, perhaps many, if I want to.
Or maybe different possible, right?
I'm sorry?
That might be different possible, because
you
may have a constraint on a bunch of variables, and you may do this way the causal structure. That way you can order it differently. Okay.
But I don't think a commitment to acyclicity should necessarily be glossed as a presumption of a notion of time prior to a notion of causation. I think you can think of it as just, you know, part of my stipulation of what, you know, what's inherent to the notion of causation without necessarily saying it's part of a notion of a temporal order. I think it makes sense to say, try to define temporal distinctions in terms of causal distinctions. You know, what it means for one event to be later than another is that the other could have been a cause of the first, and not what it means for A to cause B is, among other things, that A is prior to B. I don't think Pearl's framework commits you to spatial temporal notions being primary.
Okay, so that was a discussion on that. Flamini, do you have any questions?
For instance, how is the change of quantum reference frame related to indefinite causal structures? Can we get indefinite causal structure by changing the
reference frame?
Say we have an indefinite causal structure, can we switch reference frames where we don't? And that could be an interesting way of resolving some of the strangeness. Are there where you can't switch to a different reference frame, but you construct carefully enough that would remove that?
So there'll be some discussion on that. So tomorrow. Ding.
Maybe I should try to give some answers.
encourage
people to easily give better answers.
Do you want to stand?
So, what are the problems with the indefinite causal structure? We don't know how it works in gravity. Second question, what operation? What's the second question?
What's operationalism and and should we be critically discriminatory about operationalism? I think
we should use it when it works. We shouldn't use it when it doesn't work. third question is the ontological structure of what is CS?
Other structures.
It's irrelevant for practical purposes to consider ontological structures.
I'll give you two more questions.
I think that's enough for to encourage people to jump in and argue against me.
Okay, so Julio is happy to spin the suggests.
Go ahead.
Remember the rules. You can carry on with the list of questions if you want.
I mean, I still have a pattern, however, of answering one question by combining with another one. So, like, what are the problems with construction? Well, they don't have physical realizations in GR, so maybe we could annihilate all the questions in this way and end up with yes.
Well, I have, about this point of indefinite causality not being well defined in classical GR. If you're willing to entertain the possibility of closed time-like curves, which at least are mathematically consistent solutions, then I think it's shown that you can have indefinite causality and violate causal inequalities with that. But I guess what I would pose as a provocation is, you know, to make this more interesting, we know that you can have indefinite causality without quantum mechanics. You know, there's this Baumiller and Wolf. You can have indefinite causality that doesn't give you a closed loop of any signaling, but doesn't seem to require any notion that is quantum mechanical. And so there seems to be a sentiment that indefinite causality must come out of having a quantum superposition of causal structures, but I don't think we've really seen evidence for thinking that.
Can't you get indefinite causality from relativity?
What?
From relativity. I'm not a relativity person, that was my understanding.
You have a probabilistic from mixture of different causal structures within general relativity, within probabilistic motion of general relativity.
You just mean space-like separation, don't you?
Yeah, well, you don't know which.
Yeah.
You can't define simultaneous events.
Yeah.
You don't know which one came first.
Yeah.
It depends on how you're moving.
Well, I had in mind something a little bit stronger than that. So there's an example of that involves three parties, where each party receives a bit of information and submits a bit of information, and the bit of information that each party submits determines the difference between the bits of the other two parties that they receive. So for example, if I submit the bit one, then I know that the other two parties will receive bits that are anti-correlated. And this holds for all three parties. So on that basis, we can't say which party comes before or after any of the other ones. Yet at the same time, it's not possible for anybody to send a signal to themselves, thereby creating a loop. And I don't see how you could get something like that just from relativity. Maybe if you had a closed timeline curve. But also, I don't see that would require anything quantum mechanical either.
So now, for me, this seems to kind of bring back again to the question, like, what is the relation between causal structure and physical model, physical theories that we do know? Because I think the classical example is a perfect way to illustrate this point. So indefinite causal structure, like the logical possibilities of the way that processes could be related to each other. And for most of them, we have no idea of how they would come out. So when we justify our works in the introduction of the paper, we really think normally in the quantum way, we say, because gravity says that masses determine the space-time structure. So if the masses can be in a superposition, then the structure can be in a superposition. So this pushes like the physics towards things that are a bit like the quantum switch or similar things where, that are superpositions of definite causal structures, which are a tiny part of the logically possible causal structure that arise in quantum mechanics, and even a tiny part of those that will arrive in classical probability theory. So like, what makes a causal structure more physical than another? It's, of course, this is a question that can only be answered with physics, like taking some physical theories that we recognize as sensible. And try to
So the question is like, how to go from an action to a causal structure? Is that
sorry?
How to go from like an action principle to a causal structure?
Oh yeah, you are already trying to do the work. Well, I was
No.
Why
I was just trying to
something like that.
Yeah, sure.
That's
right.
One example of what I mean.
So constructing some map.
Yes.
Just to express some support for what you said, I think. I mean, like when people do the quantum switch in the lab, there is this huge intuition that it's about superpositions. But I think that, like, what I've been talking about, that if you analyze more carefully, it is in fact the quantum switch is happening on this time delocalized variables. If you want to be precise, if you want to really say that it's happening, but then, as I was saying in my talk, even the Baumeller-Wolf process exists on time delocalized variables, and it is classical. So, in that sense, I would say maybe this intuition about the superposition is just an artifact of the particular process we had in mind, and maybe this has not to do with quantum superpositions. But that's one indication. It may very well be that in the context of a proper physical gravitational theory where you have local time in these labs, etc., things are different, but I don't know. The closed time like curve examples show that it's not quite the case. So.
I don't see Chaslav here, but I thought that his just a quick comment. Sorry, that I thought Chaslav's original hope was that one could get indefinite causality, like violation of causal inequalities, by having some kind of crazy superposition of gravitating masses. But I guess we can't ask him if he still hopes for that.
So I want to talk about a simpler example probably than the more exotic case of the closed time like curve in gravity. So if supposing we finally we have a quantum gravity theory that involves in the quantum fluctuation of the space-time, then two events. So in classical gravity, the causal structure is rigidly defined by whether I'm space-like or now or time-like separated. Then such a fluctuation probably can create that the two events, like you cannot define sharply whether it's space-like or now or time-like, and that would be a situation that indefinite causal structure plays a role. And also in the full quantum gravity regime, locality cannot be sharply defined. We cannot say an event happens at a point. The point would be meaningless for quantum gravity situation.
When you say that, is that because invariants or?
So, one part of probably like the uncertainty principle of the geometry and the matter together would involve in that there's no notion of a point in the quantum gravity. Then in this way, it will play a role in the defining the causal structure.
Space-time fluctuates so much there isn't a meaning to locations.
There seems to be an uncertainty. What is the conjugate variable to causal structure?
This is the danger of looking at yourself.
Okay. First of all, I believe I provided the answer to one of the questions already.
Okay.
Why is quantum theory the way it is? And that's because of relativity.
Okay.
And just principle of relativity treated seriously with no distinction between types of observers. But one question that puzzles me all the time, and it's being repeated as something obvious here, is first of all, is it true that the cause always precedes the effect? And if it's true, then why is that? Because no theory really assumes. I mean, if you take classical electromagnetism, you have retarded and advanced solutions, and Feynman's and Miller's theory shown that you can take into account advanced solutions, and that doesn't change much predictions of the theory. So why do we claim that when we see light from coming from the stars, it comes from the past, not from the future, because there's perfect symmetry. So I would like to understand the origins of that rule, if it's true at all. why does the cause precede the effect?
Well, this is a bit of a crazy idea, toy research problem, maybe. But in terms of causal order, there's a paper on the order of 20 years ago by a guy named Lawrence Shulman, who showed, I was always intrigued by this, that you could have two regions of space with opposite thermodynamic arrows of time, but nevertheless, you can couple them consistently. So in other words, people see eggs break here, but aliens over there see the eggs unbreak, right? These guys see a black hole collapse, these guys see the black hole uncollapse, and vice versa. So it occurred to me, maybe to test some of these ideas, one could perhaps do quantum thermodynamics with opposite arrows of time to try and push some of these concepts and see what breaks where.
Is it possible to have such aliens that see?
Well, it's consistent. So he raised the question cosmologically, could there be regions of the universe that we could probe and we would see time flow backwards?
I was more referring to this relation between the thermodynamic and the memory arrow, because I would imagine that those aliens would in fact not be able to remember that.
Well, they remember their own thing. We think they're going backwards. They think we're going backwards. The general notion prior to that is you could only have one consistent arrow of time, but he said that's not necessarily true. And he just showed you that he had two gases, and they're coupled, right? They're not distinct. People propose multiverses where the arrows are distinct and decoupled, but he says, no, you could actually couple two systems together with opposite arrows of time. If that is an indefinite causal, I don't know what is.
I have a good friend, an experimental physicist in England, who has an excellent answer to the question why there is no antimatter in the universe. And it's because in the Big Bang, it all went backwards in time.
Yeah, but we can't see that.
Yeah. This is some sort of a joke, but...
I know. But I mean, just is it possible to maybe look at theoretical model at quantum thermal, where it's tiny and you can control it, and if quantum thermodynamics go this way forward in time and the other backward, and couple them and see if it makes any theoretical sense, and then... if it does, maybe there's a way of testing it. He was thinking cosmically on large scales, but I don't see why that's a priori necessary given the ideas here. That's all I'm saying.
Well, if you have two moving regions, one next to each other, then the arrows of time are tilted a little bit, right? So,
yeah, but there's a global arrow. This is...
Just to comment, I mean, this, when it comes to this functional dependence understanding of causality, it's completely fine to define it one way or the other. It's a symmetric notion, and so you may ask, why do we happen to be interested in those notions, causal models that coincide with what we call the forward direction of that?
But any convention you pick breaks the symmetry. I mean, I'm asking, why do you not treat symmetrically past causes and future causes?
You could, but I think... I think there is a question to be asked, but that somehow feels more about the question of what are we actually interested in. Those questions formulated as they are in that direction of time. Because you could formulate them, if I understand, from the functional perspective, I would see no problem to choose another convention. It's just, for some reason, it won't be interesting to us. What do you think?
So we're sort of essentially out of time. Maybe Ellie, do you have any comments?
Well, I thought the question that Alex raised about are there any interesting non-trivial causal difference problems? I kind of wanted to explore that one. We've been talking about a little bit offline. But in the classical causal inference setting, we generally distinguish between causal structures where you have unobserved variables versus causal structures where everything is observed. If everything is observed, all your variables are observed, then you can essentially just from seeing your data, figure out what all the causal relations are. You can just compute them. And so testing the compatibility, sort of like, is this causal structure explaining the data, is a trivial question. And if we're talking about process matrices, where you are allowed to sort of have full tomography. And so you can say sort of, I know what are all of the quantum outputs that I could see for every possible quantum input. Then you can reconstruct your process matrix and you can answer the question trivially. So I think the question, the answer is yes, there are non-trivial causal inference question problems. So the one that I can think of which I'm clearly confident in is what happens, like what sorts of quantum states could I see if I assume a particular causal structure and I don't know what were the inputs to this causal structure. So I think you could ask about this like in the triangle scenario, where you have, let's say, three parties and they're asked to output some kind of quantum state. So you could say, what are the tripartite quantum states which can come about if each pair of parties shares some initial bipartite entanglement set? And this is a restricted set of quantum states. Characterizing that set of possible quantum states is non-trivial. I'm a little torn because to some extent you could say like in the classical problem is you have a description of the causal structure and you just say what are the probability distributions that could arise. So does that mean that the only interesting quantum problems are given a quantum process, what are the possible quantum output states? Or are there sort of second level questions, which is, I know something about the output state, I know something about maybe some of the inputs, and I'm ignorant about all the rest. Is that an interesting question, or is that sort of less interesting?
Is that a causal inference problem? Because it seems you're describing a scenario where the causal structure is given and you're asking what states can be generated. So it's not about asking what is the causal structure.
So I think that causal compatibility and causal inference, which I'm glad that you're distinguishing. So I view them let me separate these problems classically and then I'll separate them quantumly. So one question is, if I have some observational statistics, does it even fit the causal structure, yes or no? The other situation is, yes, it fits the causal structure, but I don't know the inner workings of all the functional dependencies. And so now I could say, based on what I see, what can I say about the internal, not sort of the causal structure itself, but the functional relations in the causal structure? Can I compute some due conditionals? Can I estimate some causal effects, the way that things actually work? And so I think you could do the same thing for quantum situations. And I think it's still trivial, which is if you have sort of this full tomography where you can say, I don't know what my process matrix is, but I've told you what are all the possible outputs, quantum states for all possible input states, then you have full tomography and you can reconstruct the process. And of course, you can figure out what are all the sort of internal channels and all the internal theories and whatnot. You could say, if I don't have that, but you observe some information, then I think you could ask, based on the limited knowledge that I have, what can I say? So you have like a notion of sort of identifiability, which is like, what are the quantum due conditional analogs, which I can actually figure out from my observational data? What are some quantum due conditionals, which are sort of like the internal channels, where I can't pin it down based on what I see, but I can highly constrain it to be within a certain region based on my observational data? I think this is, I haven't seen anybody try to do that, but I think it's worthwhile to do that.
Okay, is this on this subject?
Yes.
Okay.
It's just that in a small and very controlled situation, we have actually worked a bit on this. The idea, I mean, if I understand what you mean. So the idea to say, okay, you have a process with some inputs and some outputs and some hypothesis on what the causal structure may be. And the question is to design a statistical test that is not the full tomography, but it's just a test that decides which causal structure you have from measurements you can do. So, and as you said, these are two very different questions. One question is, what is the causal structure among the causal, and the other question is, what are the functional dependencies after you do that? And in this work that we studied, it was kind of nice to see that, okay, you have some efficient tests for that, and these two variables are somehow complementary to each other. Not complementary in the sense of conjugate variables, but knowing having more information about the functional dependencies kind of makes your test about just the causal structure like less efficient. There is kind of trade-off between the probability of success in finding out the causal dependencies on the one and in finding out the causal structure.
What's that? Is that a paper?
Yeah,
describe it. What's it called? Or some words
called,
that I can.
Called quantum speed up in the identification of cause effect relations.
Okay.
So it was published in Nature Communication last March. March.
Yeah, I asked the question about the larger space theories, if it's worth exploring.
Yeah, that was good. So I think, is there any final comments anyone wants to make? I think everyone has spoken. Is that right?
I do have a, I mean, maybe it's not a grand finale comment, but it's something about a kind of criticism of this interpretation of the Baumler and Wolf result that I mean, I've heard people say before that it's somehow we have indefinite causal structure, but nothing quantum is going on here. But I think it doesn't really mean anything to say nothing quantum is going on here, because you could also say the same thing about, for instance, say the GHC Merman non-locality argument. So you have three parties and they're putting in a bit, and then the parities of their output bits are correlated in a way that doesn't have a classical explanation, or at least not a classical local hidden variable explanation. But we really do say indeed something quantum is going on there, because we can realize this by giving them the particles of a GHC state, telling them to measure X or Y on these things and noting down these probabilities, it has this behavior. But it's kind of a purely classical input and output thing, but it really is a quantum thing. And I mean, it could be the case for this Baumler and Wolf situation that there's some sort of quantum process matrix inside which is giving this strange behavior. Maybe not.
So, I mean, in principle, it's true if you just look at the device-independent correlations that come out. But the point there is that you really have the device-dependent description. So you actually have the process matrix that is itself defined as a classical process matrix. So you define really things as a vertices, a classical system coming in and performs a classical operation, and then a classical thing goes out. So not in terms of input-output relation as in a black box scenario, but really in the device-dependent sense.
It's not like you violate a GHZ inequality, but really you write a state
that is a product state in the computational basis.
Yeah, but I think the point still stands, which is, sure, in the case of GHZ, we have the benefit of knowing that we can do that with quantum systems. And that's why we say it's quantum. But in the case where we don't know how to physically implement some probabilistic phenomenon, is it really valid to attach labels like classical or quantum to that?
I mean, so what does it mean to say you have a device-dependent thing that realizes
a time loop? In the same way as you can say you have a state and it's an entangled state, or it's superposition, or it's a product state in a computational basis. And typically, if we have a product state in computational basis, you will say this is classical, and not just in terms of the correlations you can extract, but from the device-dependent point of view, in the sense that everything you can say about the state, you can say with a completely classical theory. Then, of course, you can imagine a scenario where there is some real quantum stuff that, for some reason, looks classical in that case. But just to say that there is a distinction between just having GHZ-like input-output things and the process matrix description that it's
Nice, it's more like talking about the state and not about the correlations coming out of the state. Yeah, okay. It's gone past 5 o'clock. I think we should call it a day and